as we have Mars opposing Pluto, we also have Mars squaring Saturn. So to me, this really connotes institutional breakdown. It connotes also a fight to the death. So when you think about what's going on with Gaddafi right now in Libya, the rebels are getting close to surrounding him.
Right.
They're moving quite quickly. So there's going to be a fight to the death. Pluto, Mars opposed Pluto is a fight to the death. That's what it is. Okay. And what other areas in our life are we looking at that? Some of our politics looks like a fight to the death.
Yeah.
In other areas, people are getting pretty desperate for their own physical welfare. And so more criminal activity. Because if you don't have a job and you can't make a living, then you're going to go and get what you need using any means necessary. What I just said there, if your life is hopeless and you still have needs, you will do and utilize any means necessary to take care of yourself. This is where the politicians have got it wrong. The elites, and everybody in Congress is an elite, because you have to be a millionaire to be elected to Congress. The president's an elite. He's a multimillionaire. All the corporate people are multimillionaire, and they live in their gated communities. They live in their sanctuaries. And I think one of the biggest criticisms of what's going on in Washington is that, and it's, I'm not the first one to say this, these people are disconnected to what's going on, what's happening with ordinary Americans. They're disconnected. They are insulated. And this is along with the ideological polarization and the games playing. These things are actually creating an environment that's leading to more hopelessness and despair. And the inaction, which part of what the inaction is to destroy the first black president. That's obvious from the Republican strategy. But the inaction is causing the situation to get worse. So now we're on the verge of another recession. Double dip recession, because traditionally what has happened is that when there's been a problem, government has moved in to help jumpstart the economy. That's what happened in the Depression with the CCC and with Roosevelt and putting people to work. Millions of young men were put to work in the CCC. And there were other programs. And then you have the social safety net. Yeah, the safety net.
That right.
All of that came out of the last time we had Pluto square Uranus, which was in the 30s, which we have right now. That's another part of the what we're looking at here is Pluto square Uranus. 80 years. Every 80 years you have that. It's actually Uranus square. Last time it happened was in the early 30s. But most people are dead now who lived in those times. And so we don't have any memory of it. We have history, but we don't now have a cultural or social memory of what that was like. And, that, unfortunately, because we don't have that memory, we have nothing to really gauge it. Unless we make a really good historical analysis about what happened then. But it's, not the same as standing in line for soup kitchen. You can watch it. You can just look at a picture of, 200 people standing in line at a soup kitchen. And if you look at it long enough, you might be able to empathize with that. You know? But in our society now, we hide it away because we have such a sensational press and media that we basically can, you know, people don't know that 50% of black males are unemployed in this country. They don't. What does that mean? Well, because they're all living by the, they're all living in the ghetto somewhere or off somewhere in their own enclaves. Fact is, 50% of black males are unemployed, especially the younger ones. Well, what's happening then with the discontent there? What's going on? What's going on with someone who's given up hope that they can get a job? You know, it's the same thing that happened in the 30s. And the desperation is there, but we are ignoring it because our leaders are insulated from it. And we have the way we set our culture up, and the people who control the media don't want us really to be looking at that. They don't want us to be looking at that. So in spite of the media that's supposed to be covering the news, in spite of that, we're going to have to come to terms with these things. Thank heavens for the internet. At least we can get an honest appraisal there. Or at least we can share our own experience of what's happening. We can share and we can cross-pollinate. But right now, the institutions of government and of the economy, of business, can't do it. They're paralyzed. And business doesn't want to invest money right now. They think it's better to go get low-cost loans from the federal government, from the Fed, you know, and the Federal Reserve, and they invested in something. And they get some kind of low-cost loan, they invest it. And they don't want to put their money to work. They don't see themselves as being a solution to economic, societal, and social problems. They see themselves as being able to maximize their investments. So the whole system is slowly grinding to a halt, and the breakdowns are starting to happen. And if, as we don't answer the questions now, we will have to answer them soon. You know? And in the midst of all this, in the midst of all of this volatility and instability and discord, we have the attitude that I'm willing to die for my beliefs. And this is it's that Pluto opposition Mars. You know, it's going to be a fight to the end. You know, this is not really good for our society. It intensifies the polarization and the entrenchment, and it's not good. We cannot solve problems.
Tiger, there's another wave that's going on in the midst of this too. I think even if we're just focused on the futility and the inherent self-destructiveness that's involved in the social and political dynamics that we've fostered in human society, there is at the same time, and this is something that you're very attuned to, there's a deeper process that's going on here. There's something else that is making itself available, making itself known. There's another whole layer of experience. The story that we've been all inundated with in world events is not the only story that's going on. There's a larger and a deeper process that's also unfolding at the same time. And so it's strange. There's a dynamic that has the energy of a greater consciousness, a more connected, thriving awareness of how things thrive together, awareness of how things work. And the awareness of how things work has a slightly different and perhaps profoundly different shape to it. The awareness of how things really work and how they grow and how they live and how they thrive. That's a different consciousness and a different perspective than the awareness of how things are breaking down. Now, we have both, and I'm not saying that we can strictly ignore the struggle and the destructive process, but I think there is certainly something that also gets our attention about how things also grow, thrive, live, how things are always and everywhere connected, and that takes us in a whole different direction. That takes us in a different level of our experience. That takes us into a whole different texture of life. So that, to me, is also something that's even more imminently present to us at this point. I don't want to ignore or diminish what you're saying about the greater scene that's being played out politically and socially. I mean, that's very much a part of the story. And I think what we're hitting here right now is a node that it's a crossing point or a marker, I think, in some respects, that kind of relates. As you were mentioning at the beginning of the discussion about the equinoxes, the solstice last winter, the southern solstice, where this beautiful lunar eclipse happened right on the solstice, that to me seemed like a crossing point.
Yes.
What we had this summer seems like another crossing point. And what we're now at and approaching the equinox, that's another crossing point.
Yes.
So it's like the dynamic is being resonated in different ways. The intensity of the day-to-day experience is being resonated in very strong ways, but the resonance of the fuller level of our life and experience is also resonating more strongly than ever. And see, I know you're very tuned into that as well, so I wanted to definitely get you on that wavelength and talk about that, because if something is crumbling and falling into its own self-destruction, there's something that's being born. There's something that's alive and emerging. So I know that you probably have a zillion things that you could say about that too, so I wanted to get you on that.
That's what I was trying to say about the polarization leading to two groups, two different ways of being, and one that was relationship-oriented with love as its ethic, and the other being material orientation with fear as its significator. That's what I was trying to say, but in any of this analysis, you see that the human race is our growth and our development, our movement is coming to a head. And the only way that you can understand it, I mean, karmically, we're coming to the end of a 26,000 year cycle. If you put all the charts of that and you line them all up and look down through the center of it, you would be looking down through some kind of a weird spiral staircase that just went on to infinity. Might as well be infinity for 26,000 years. And we need to have a lens-like quality here, because we cannot talk about all of it at the same time. We can live it all at the same time. And as we live it all, we will become multidimensional ourselves. So this compression that's happening is taking the dynamics and the truth of many different levels and squeezing it down into a kind of transformational imperative that literally will catapult us from caterpillar to butterfly in one quantum leap. And that, but it is difficult to talk about it without having to isolate it into its own particular rungs and aspects, and then how one integrates that back into experience For instance, if the monetary system fails, and you go to the bank and find out that money is no longer worth anything, suddenly everything that's going on with the Fed and with banks and the monetary system becomes very much irrelevant to your immediate life. We cannot get gas to put in our cars. Then it becomes relevant and immediate, and it will no longer be in an abstraction. It will have real consequence. Somewhere along the line, it's possible that that's going to happen. We know that we're going to run out of oil someday. So we also have to look at that, because we can make projections about how much resource is left on the planet. You know, we can make projections about that. So this moving back to a more objective perspective and looking at things, you can do that with your personal life also. And often that will happen if you have a peak experience. Most of us, a peak experience doesn't happen in a good way. I mean, I wrote a book called Walk in Beauty, but I wrote that book after I had experienced a lot of pain. Pain was my teacher. I got to a certain point where I didn't need pain anymore as my teacher. Beauty became then the prime motivator, the prime guidance system. Okay? And you could substitute anything in there, happiness, you know, fulfillment, peace, whatever you like. You know, as long as you're not living and you're not living and growing strictly because of pain and melodrama, then we can move on to a higher expression of who we are. But it's part of the whole thing. It's part of being human. I couldn't have written that book, and I couldn't be celebrating beauty now, unless I had gone through all that pain and had to find a way to deal with it. You know, and that's constantly the challenge. Constantly the challenge is to take the experience and the end product of learning and reintegrate it into our lives so that we can come from a higher level, a more fulfilled level, a more positive level. And that's me talking from a place of being over on this side, the camp of love. I want to be over there. I want my dealings in my life to be high integrity, be compassionate, to be empathetic, you know, to be mutual. That's what I want. And that's where I move with my body. So if I have relationships or I get involved in any kind of relationship that seems to be demeaning or that seems to be operating from the old pattern, I can say, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. And if that means ending a friendship or if that means quitting a job, you can do that. And what happens is that you begin to assist yourself, enable and empower yourself to create that different scenario, that different lifestyle. We do it all by the choices that we make, you know, regardless of, you know, what the president's thinking or doing or what these high mucky mucks are doing in the corporate boardrooms. We make it happen by the choices that we make in each and every moment and with the way we use our attention to look and determine what's important in our lives.
Well, that is something that seems most profound to me, because it seems obvious to me the farther along we get, we're not very aware of where our attention goes. We're not very tuned in to where all of our energy and resources are going. I think that we're having a big, big awakening and lesson about that. But it comes all the way down to the level of where our own life force, where our own vitality, where our own attentiveness goes. To me, attentiveness is a combination of three things. It's that vitality, and it's our perception. Attentiveness is that, but it's also our hearts. It's also our perspective. So you take vitality, your very life force, your presence, and all of your perception. You put your energy, so you're totally there with, you realize that your perception is the movement of your essential energy. In that way, your vitality and your perception are one fluid thing. And then when your heart comes into it, it's like, well, there's a certain amount that I'm available to. There's a certain amount that I'm open to. There's a certain amount that I'm experiencing. And so it's when all that's working together, we start to see the great potential that attention is. And that out of conscious attention, attentive attention, out of that comes a new type of activity, a new type of choice. And it seems to me these two things go together in this way, that we could think of attentiveness like a flower, certainly with our energy and with our hearts. Think about it when your energy, your vitality is flowing, your perception's open, and your heart is available, right? Well, that's very much like an open, available, energetic state. It's very much like flowering. So if attentiveness is the flower, perhaps, of the consciousness or of the soul, then activity would be the fruit. And our attentiveness, the more it's open, the more we're really tuned in and focused in what's happening in our lives, in our experience, and how the connection between the inner energy and the outer energy, how those things are all moving together. The more attentive we become to how all that works, the more conscious our actions are. And I love what Rudolf Steiner teaches us about this. 100 years ago, Rudolf Steiner was saying that with respect to our thinking, it is as though we are barely awake. With respect to our feeling, our sensing, you know, what our sensual awareness is, it is as though we are asleep but dreaming. And what he said 100 years ago about human consciousness was that with respect to our action, our will, it is as though we are completely dead asleep. Steiner was saying this about the general state of human consciousness 100 years ago. He also said that that would change over time. We would naturally move towards a more aware state with respect to both our sensing and our acting. Well, this is exactly what the fruiting or the flowering of consciousness and the fruiting of conscious behavior, conscious action, conscious choices. Those go right in line with what Steiner was saying could happen for us. He basically was pointing out that it wasn't happening 100 years ago, but now perhaps we are ready. Perhaps we are on the verge of becoming so aware of where our life and our attentiveness flow that we actually start to see how it is that our action and our experience unfolds. I think that is the essential, it's such a basic level of shift that we're in the midst of. It's something, we take all of that for granted as if we really know what we're doing, what we really know what our experience is, what we really, we pretend that we are in command of this. And what our experience is showing us right now is that we have been dead asleep up to this point. And, you know, once the recognition that we're dead asleep is there, well, then a different type of attention begins. I see this as a really essential part of the whole dynamic, the whole process that we have going on here.